Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.
In the first season of Game of Thrones and in George R. R. Martin's books, Maester Aemon tells Jon that
love is the death of duty.
In the final season of Game of Thrones, but not in Martin's books, at least yet, Tyrion tells that same Jon Snow that
sometimes duty is the death of love.
Either proposition sounds pretty bleak to me, but if there is any story that might be able to prove that love and duty can indeed coexist, it may very well be the story of Eric with an E and Eric with an A, the Cargill twins. Today we'll be exploring the Cargill twins through George R. R. Martin's books and through season one of House of the Dragon, all as we ponder story possibilities for the upcoming season two of the television show. Needless to say, there will be spoilers for season two of House of the Dragon, so if you're spoiler adverse and want to leave now, we certainly can't blame you. We do promise multiple spoiler-free presentations in the near future, and of course, we thank you for stopping by. But if you're sticking around, then let me say, welcome. I'm Matt, and this is Before the Dragon Podcast. The inspiration for Eric with an E and Eric with an A is reported to have come from Arthurian legend regarding Balin and Balin. In that telling, they are two tragic brothers who, despite their nobility, wind up killing each other. We've seen evidence in shots from a couple of the different trailers that indicate we might get a clash between the brothers Cargill in season two of House of the Dragon. It's a little ditty that I like to call the Royal Guard Rumble. Are you ready to Royal Guard Rumble? Copyright strike? No? Good. And today we'll be exploring the seeds of this event, as well as the impact this event may have on the overall story. In actuality, the overall story of House Cargill in Martin's works is a relatively minor one, with the one exception being, of course, the material that we are covering today. The sigil of House Cargill is a golden goose on Bindi, sinister black and red. There is also a mention of House Cargill in one of the offshoots of A Song of Ice and Fire stories, Martin's The Hedge Knight, which is set several years after the dance and the source of an HBO upcoming television show now entering production. But otherwise, the house sits somewhat on the outskirts of the main story, so far, at best. However, it must be acknowledged that these brothers in the Kingsguard do seemingly have a noble impact on the histories of Westeros being passed down. Songs are written in tribute to the brothers and their plight of declaring love while performing duty, the very clash of noble ideas that plagued Jon Snow, as we mentioned at the start. Additionally, in our more advanced time period of the main story of A Song of Ice and Fire, Bran, Sansa, and even Cersei and Lady Olenna have an awareness of, or at least indirect connection to, these two brothers. Two brothers, mind you, that are alike in practically every way, except the eventual heir to the Seven Kingdoms that they commit their pledges to. The story of the Cargill brothers has achieved legendary status in Westeros. Indeed, everyone seems to remember at least something about the Cargill twins. From Bran 2, A Game of Thrones, the twins Sir Eric and Sir Eric, who had died on one another's swords hundreds of years ago, when brother fought sister in the war the singers called the Dance of the Dragons. From Tyrion 10 of A Clash of Kings, Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight cried the day Princess Nerys wed his brother Aegon, Sansa Stark said, and the twins Sir Eric and Sir Eric died with tears on their cheeks after each had given the other a mortal wound. From Sansa One of A Storm of Swords. "Who are they?" she asked Sir Loras. "My grandmother's personal guard," he told her. "Their mother named them Eric and Eric, but grandmother can't tell them apart, so she calls them left and right." And finally, from Cersei Seven, A Feast for Crows. Perhaps she would send Loras Tyrell to do the swatting if the Knight of Flowers should somehow return alive from Dragonstone. That would be delicious. If the gods were good, each of them would kill each other like Sir Eric and Sir Eric. As I said, everyone seems to know the story. And in the books, there are buildups in that story that do not occur in the television show that might lead to separate reasonings as to why these sides were chosen. I do want to make it clear to my audience that I feel like the television show has actually made some good choices in redefining why Eric and Eric made the choices that they have. To me, in the books, it feels much more like the choice was made for the brothers. And more on that in a second. But here is a list of things that we didn't get in season one of the television show that happened in the books, at least according to the Maester's writings. First of all, both Cargills are defeated by Criston Cole in a tournament. And maybe we can say that happened during the tournament that we saw in the premiere episode of House of the Dragon, but it wasn't shown to us, that is for certain. In the lists, he defeated Prince Daemon once again and unhorsed both of the celebrated Cargill twins, Sir Eric and Sir Eric of the Kingsguard, before falling to Lord Lyman Malister. Here's one thing that might have been an early key turning point for Eric.
That's Eric with an A!
To later stay with Aegon in the books, that was actually not presented in the television show. It comes to us via the testimony of Septon Eustace, who tells us that Eric actually discovered Daemon and Rhaenyra in bed together. Eustace, the less salacious of the two, writes that Prince Daemon seduced his niece, the princess, and claimed her maidenhood. When the lovers were discovered abed together by Sir Eric Cargill of the Kingsguard and brought before the king, Rhaenyra insisted that she was in love with her uncle and pleaded with her father for leave to marry him. Of course, this did not happen in the show, which portrayed the entire potential incident between Daemon and Rhaenyra in a brothel well away from the eyes of the Kingsguard. In the books, it seems the mere luck of Eric,
that's Eric with an E,
being assigned to Rhaenyra might have been the main reason for why the brothers ended up choosing opposing sides. And we can see that in a moment in the books where either brother has a choice on whom to serve. So that brings me to this question. In that moment, could this incident have been made easier for Eric
with an A
to stay put in the service of the king on the throne rather than switching to Rhaenyra's side merely because he might have thought her and Daemon's actions together earlier as not necessarily honorable? Feel free to let me know what you think at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod on socials and on YouTube. I mentioned that Eric,
with an E,
has been assigned to Rhaenyra as opposed to defecting to Rhaenyra's side as portrayed in the television show. You see, in the books, Breakbones was not only the likely father of Rhaenyra's first three children, he was also made her personal sworn shield. Upon Breakbones' return to Harrenhal, Sir Harwind was replaced by Eric,
with an E,
as that sworn shield. King Viserys further decreed that Queen Alicent and her sons would return with him to court, while Princess Rhaenyra confined herself to Dragonstone with her sons. Henceforth, Eric Cargill of the Kingsguard would serve her, whilst Breakbones returned to Harrenhal. So those are events that we can definitely associate with season one of the show, even though they're slightly different. I mentioned a meeting where the brothers tried to convince each other to join their own side. However, the season one finale had a scene where Otto Hightower comes to Dragonstone with terms for Rhaenyra, While it may be a replacement for the scene in the books where this aforementioned meeting occurs, now that Luceris is dead in the television show, it seems very unlikely that we will get this wonderful scene as painted by the Maesters in Fire and Blood. Long after the dance was done, the singer Lucien of Tarth would compose a sad ballad called Farewell My Brother, still sung today. The song purports to relate the last meeting between Sir Eric Cargill and his twin, Sir Eric, as Orwell's party was boarding the ship that would carry them back to King's Landing. Sir Eric had sworn his sword to Aegon, Sir Eric to Rhaenyra. In the song, each brother tries to persuade the other to change sides. Failing, they exchange declarations of love and part, knowing that when they next meet, it will be as enemies. It is possible such a farewell did indeed take place that day on Dragonstone. However, none of our sources make mention of such. So, as you can see, it may very well be that Lucien of Tarth created a song of complete fiction. Romanticized because songs have to be that way if stories of these two brothers are to be remembered by the likes of a Bran or a Sansa or even a Cersei. So perhaps the scene with Otto on Dragonstone proves that the event didn't occur. Myself, as a person who reacts more emotionally than logically quite often, prefers to just imagine that this meeting occurred. But I am fairly certain that the opportunity to present this dramatic turn has now passed us on the show. So call it what you want. Luck of the draw, fate, choice, whatever you want to call the circumstances that are presented in the book, putting these brothers on opposite sides, it seems to me that the sides are drawn for the brothers. Yet the television show has presented this separation in an entirely different and, in my opinion, possibly more effective way. In the beginning of this presentation, we theorized, or at least fantasized, that perhaps love and duty can coexist in some way, shape, or form. The passages we've examined from the source material tend to lend themselves to that type of thinking. However, in the television show, I'm not certain we can say the case is the same. To me, it actually seems that two separate senses of duty have already overcome those senses of love, for the most part. But I actually find each choosing of a side, as presented in the television show, while not considered nearly as romantic or even legendary, is in fact a better approach. In the television show, we don't really get to know either brother until at least season 1, episode 8. Any shots prior to that are fleeting, but we can gather some information about some shots prior to the more pronounced presence in episodes 9 and 10. What do we learn? For one, we learn that these brothers seemingly look so much alike that not even Queen Alicent can tell them apart. This is something that is a key point in regards to a season 2 tactic we will likely see employed. In other words, if you can't tell these boys apart, are you really sure if you're being guarded by the right boy? More on that soon. Another thing that we learn is that these brothers often spar together, perhaps to a point where they know each other's moves very well, or at least enough to make a fight between the two of them quite interesting. And we saw an exhibition of that in episode 8 when Jace and Luke were walking through the practice yard. But the real separation between the two brothers is given to us in season 1, episode 9, The Green Council. Otto sends the brothers searching for a missing Aegon, and as they search, we find out the difference in their philosophies. Let's look at Eric with an A first, who I will say probably has a slightly more conservative approach to his position. He tends to read his oath by strict letter of the law. This is a view that tells him that his oath is to the ruler, no matter who that ruler may be. We might also suspect that if he is a student of precedent, you might use the Great Council of 101 as that precedent. That council basically decreed that a woman, no matter whether higher in station or not, would be secondary to a male heir. Something that was basically argued by Otto and others for the entirety of season one. In contrast, the philosophy of Eric, with an E, is likely closer to what some might consider more liberal. His approach to his oath leaves a little more room for interpretation. Eric sees that Aegon's follies in the slums of King's Landing have led to some very unfortunate circumstances for some of Aegon's bastard children, and he questions whether someone like that should be served at all. Now, if Eric is a student of precedent himself, he might cite the precedent of all of the oaths being taken to support Rhaenyra's claim to the throne years before. But are we really going to take all these differing views and precedents as to be proving anything one way or the other? Perhaps we shouldn't, and to even place these mindsets on the brothers is likely reckless speculation.
Reckless speculation. Reckless speculation.
But these also might be the way that we could prove how, as Tyrion says,
sometimes duty is the death of love.
And in that way, we see that my idealistic notion of both love and duty coexisting is most likely folly, at least in the television show. We might even say that the conversation in the fighting pits is a tribute to the argument described in Lucien of Tarth's ballad. But in the television show, the result is a choice, not fate, not luck. Once Kristen Cole and Aemon find Aegon, Eric with an A fights, and yet Eric with an E refuses and walks away. The latter instead helps Rhaenys to freedom from the Red Keep, or at least tries to, and then makes his way to Dragonstone to form a new pledge to his queen, Rhaenyra. This as opposed to his brother, who is quite happy to just maintain his current pledge to whoever sits the throne. With these independent actions of these brothers, it's easy to understand how each of the brothers might consider their counterpart a traitor. And we do see steely determination etched on either brother's faces as they face each other at Dragonstone when Otto presents the terms to Rhaenyra. And that thought of considering each other a traitor does creep into something that we will explore next as we find out how these brothers continue down the ultimate path as laid out by Arthurian legend. In this little ditty that I like to call, Are You Ready to Royal Guard Rumble? We have to take into account some things that have already occurred along with these events in the books themselves. Obviously, Luke has died, and blood and cheese has occurred. Additionally, at least in the books, Otto Hightower has been dismissed as Hand of the King, and Kristen Cole has taken Otto's place at Aegon's side. And you know how I feel about Kristen Cole. Butthurt, woman-hating fiend who wishes he could... But when will these events that we're about to discuss take place on the television show? If content providers seemingly mostly agree that the blood and cheese incident will occur in the season premiere of House of the Dragon, and if those same content providers believe that Rook's Rest will occur around episodes 4 or 5, then we have to believe that the Royal Guard Rumble will likely occur somewhere in between. My personal guess is episode 3 of season 2. And in Martin's Fire and Blood, we are told what the plan is. King Aegon also desired to avenge the murder of his heir by blood and cheese by means of an attack on Dragonstone descending on the island citadel on Dragonback to seize or slay his half-sister and her bastard sons. It took all of the Green Council to dissuade him. Sir Criston Cole urged a different course. The pretender princess had made use of stealth and treachery to kill Prince Jaehaerys, Cole said. Let them do the same. We will pay the princess back in her own bloody coin, he told the king. The instrument the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard chose for the king's vengeance was his sworn brother, Sir Eric, with an A, Cargill. But why Sir Eric? The story tells us more. Sir Eric was intimately familiar with the ancient seat of House Targaryen, having visited there often during the reign of King Viserys. Dragonstone depended on the sea for sustenance. It would be a simple thing to deliver Cargill to the fishing village under the castle. From there, he could make his own way to the queen. And Sir Eric and his brother Sir Eric were twins, identical in all respects. Not even their fellows in the Kingsguard could tell the two apart, both Mushroom and Eustace assert. Once clad in white, Sir Eric should be able to move freely about Dragonstone, Sir Criston suggested. Any guards who chanced upon him would surely mistake him for his brother. Now look, I understand that many people dislike Criston Cole. You know how I feel about Criston Cole. But you have to admit that at least strategically, this is a pretty darn good plan. Yes, things can go wrong with it. And of course will. But there's really only one circumstance that can truly foil this plan. The two of them being at the same place at the same time. Which, spoiler alert, does happen. Obviously, more on that in a second. Because it is from this point where the whole question of love and duty actually comes into play again. It seems that Fire and Blood once again ups the drama a bit more by giving us a peek into the mind of Sir Criston's agent, Sir Eric. Eric with an A. Sir Eric did not undertake this mission happily. Indeed, Septon Eustace tells us the Treble Knight visited the Red Keep Sept on the night he was to sail to pray forgiveness to the Mother Above. Yet, as Kingsguard, sworn to obey the King and Commander, he had no choice in honor but to make his way to Dragonstone, clad in the salt-stained garb of a fisherman. But as readers, we might also ask what, or even why exactly, Sir Eric was asking forgiveness. Perhaps it was not derived out of love for his brother at all, but rather merely asking forgiveness for the act of kinslaying, something that is heavily frowned on by Westeros culture, as we've discussed before. The only reason I continue to bring up this whole love versus duty thing is because of the way the rest of the story is presented. Once again, we have that situation that I call the mushroom problem. Mushroom! Presented to us. Remember that these stories are told based on three different testimonies from three different people with three entirely different perspectives. Some passages in the book and even some scenes in the television show examined before may support one accounting, while others may support a different accounting. And once again, I will say that what the show has given us so far as these brothers go may be evidence for how the show will present the following turn of events in relation to the books. There are some things that we do know definitively. One is that Eric, with an A, gets to and infiltrates Dragonstone successfully. Another thing that we know is that the two brothers do in fact encounter each other, forcing them to fight with each other on behalf of their respective causes. The two main testimonies that we take from the books are the testimonies of Grand Maester Munkin and the court jester Mushroom. Mushroom! This next passage comes from Munkin's testimony, and it does suggest a coexistence of love and duty. Making his way to the royal apartments, the gods brought him face to face with Sir Eric himself, who knew at once what his brother's presence meant. The singers tell us that Sir Eric said, "I love you, brother," as he unsheathed his blade, and that Sir Eric replied, "And I you, brother," as he drew his own.
Eric with an A. You're my brother. You're my brother. Trainer, all know you'll always be my bro. I love you, brother. Eric with an E. Trainer, all know you'll always be my bro. I love you, brother. I love you, brother. Eric with an A.
Whoa. How did that get on there? You weren't supposed to get that. That was just me kind of doing a little fanfic. Hey, I'm a love and duty guy. Sorry. Just pretend that didn't happen. Let's move on. So here's the difference between Maester Munkin and Mushroom's accounts as they begin to vary wildly. And again, just get that thing that just happened out of your mind. First, Munkin follows the theme of love and duty with his passage.
The twins battled for the better part of an hour, Grandmaster Munkin says. The clash of steel woke half the court, but the onlookers could only stand by helplessly and watch, for no man could tell which brother was which. In the end, Sir Eric and Sir Eric dealt each other mortal wounds and died in one another's arms with tears upon their cheeks.
And then, of course, we have Mushroom's account. And this one is, even within the text, called shorter, saltier, and altogether nastier.
The fight lasted only moments, our fool says. There were no decorations of brotherly love. Each Cargill denounced the other as traitor as they clashed. Sir Eric, standing above his twin on the spiral steps, struck the first mortal blow, a savage cut that nigh took his brother's sword arm off at the shoulder. But as he collapsed, Sir Eric grasped his slayer's white cloak and pulled him close enough to drive a dagger deep into his belly. Sir Eric was dead before the first guards arrived. But Sir Eric took 4 days to die of his gut wound, screaming in horrible pain and cursing his traitor brother all the while.
The passages from Fire and Blood that wraps up these conflicting testimonies say the following.
For obvious reasons, singers and storytellers have shown a marked preference for the tale as told by Munkin. Maesters and scholars must make their own determination as to which version is more likely. All that Septon Eustace says upon the matter is that the Cargill twins slew each other, and there we must leave it.
Now, you must understand that the show is, in actuality, stripped of the convenience that is afforded a book. The book gets to leave it up to its readers to decide whether they approach the testimony of Munkin, or more like the singer's side, or the testimony of Mushroom, which is definitely not like the singer's side. The show has another problem because it is tasked with actually showing us a version of events, and in my opinion, lending it more canon weight than most book readers would prefer. But what I want to know is, which version do you feel the television show should give its viewers? The writers have to judge certain things that we're not allowed to. A declaration of love might be considered good drama by some, but also might be considered over drama by others. And it seems to me that an HBO television mentality might prefer presenting someone howling in pain for a few shots representing the passage of days over one long dramatic sequence of fighting where two brothers declare their love with each and every blow. But who knows? Let me know what you think. Once again, at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod on social medias, and for commenting on our YouTube videos, or you can send an email to mattsaudioblog@gmail.com. There is one other way that I'm slightly more convinced that we might get something closer to the Mushroom version than the Munkin version. And let's discuss that as we look at the aftermath of this epic duel. If you've been subjected to my Rook's Rest presentation, you probably already know where I'm going with this.
What are you talking about?
You ask? Well, we're told that this act of vengeance isn't Kristen Cole's only plan. It's probably safe to say that by the time these events occur with Eric and Eric, Kristen Cole has already begun his march through the Crown Lands with an ultimate goal of taking the seats of houses that are declared for Rhaenyra and has already begun to attack Rook's Rest, or is at least is in the process of getting to Rook's Rest. In fact, we are told that Lord Staunton dispatches a raven to Dragonstone and
the bird arrived as Rhaenyra and her blacks were mourning Sir Eric and debating the proper response to Aegon the Usurper's latest attack.
In addition to that, we know from Fire and Blood,
9 days after Lord Staunton dispatched his plea for help, the sound of leathern wings was heard across the sea and the dragon Maelys appeared above Rook's Rest.
In my Rook's Rest presentation, I asked, admittedly in a slightly silly fashion, if it really takes 9 days to reach Dragonstone from that particular keep, even if Gendry can get from there to Dragonstone in a day and night's rowing. So think of it like this. If Rhaenyra and gang have to endure 4 days of Eric screaming, and then at least one other day of mourning, that allows probably for at least 3 days of debate before Rhaenys shows up at Rook's Rest. And I guess that math works for me. Anyway, my point is this interconnection of Mushroom's account of the brothers and the accounting of Rook's Rest makes more sense to me, but that's just my opinion. At any rate, this delay slash distraction could be considered an after effect on the outcome of Rook's Rest itself. Remember that Rhaenys goes alone with Maelys. And it seems it's because everyone else is a little bit out of whack from this recent attack. Another effect, of course, is now Rhaenyra is down a sworn protector. Granted, Aegon is as well, but it may not be as easy for Rhaenyra to replace a Kingsguard given her limited population source, as opposed to Aegon, who has much of the realm from which to choose. There is also one last lingering question that book readers may want to know the answer to, something that the show really has the option of giving a definitive answer, or perhaps not if they choose to. And that question comes from this passage in Fire and Blood.
The true purpose of Sir Eric's mission remains a matter of some contention. Grandmaster Munkin tells us that Carkle had been commanded to slay Rhaenyra, putting an end to the rebellion in one stroke, whilst Mushroom insists that her sons were Cargol's prey, that Aegon II wished to wash out the blood of his murdered son with that of his bastard nephews.
I have a feeling that whether the show definitively answers this or not, the debate is likely to continue within the world of book readers, mainly because that's what we do. In conclusion, what have we learned today? To be honest, not much, really. Except that two brothers are going to fight. And two brothers are going to die in that fight. And the world of Westeros will likely be an even sadder place because of it. Again, I'd love to hear your thoughts about everything that we've discussed today and anything that you think I've missed. Because, hey, it's me. I always miss something. Let me know what I missed by reaching out to me at the letter B, the number 4, the Dragon Pod, on all of the social medias and on YouTube. You can leave comments there as well. Hey, while you're on those video or audio feeds, could you do me a solid and subscribe to the podcast or to the YouTube channel?
Subscribe, comment.
Thanks again for joining me. I'm Matt. I really appreciate you sticking around to the end of Before the Dragon Podcast.
Eric with an E, Eric with an A. You're my brother. Traitor, oh no, you'll always be my bro. I love you, brother. Eric with an E.
Find all back episodes and other information at mattsaudioblog.com.
One other thing. I'm sure he's probably already turned the podcast off, but special thanks to Patman23 for enduring all of my A's and E's in this presentation, simply because I love antagonizing him. He's my nemesis. Love you, Patman.